It's October the 27th, 2015. I'm Peter Lim, the African Studies bibliographer here at Michigan State University, and this is another in the African Studies interview series about prominent figures in African Studies at MSU. Well, let me just say that behind every great university stands a great library and, of course, great librarians, and even today in the digital sphere. And Dr. Joseph Lauer has made a major contribution to the African Studies edifice here at MSU and across the country over many decades. Joe, can we start with a little bit of background for the listeners to your own interest with Africa and African Studies and African Studies librarianship?
What took me into Africa? Okay, thank you, Peter. I got interested in Africa growing up in Minnesota, and part of it was just hating the winters, but the second part was that as an undergraduate studying history at a small college in Minnesota, I was encouraged to go and do non-Western history, and I looked around at the various topics of non-Western history and thought, not too many people working in African studies, maybe I should go into that. And it was, of course, the early 60s, the time of the Civil Rights Movement, which created also an interest in black history. In kind of pursuit of graduate degrees in history, I first went into the Peace Corps, spent 2 years in Senegal, in the Casamance region of the Senegal, working on rural development projects.
When was that, roughly?
This was 64 to 66. Applied to graduate school, got accepted. But on that spring, thinking about on the long bus rides between Dakar and Casamance region one day, thinking, do I really want to teach or is it something else I would like to do? And I started thinking about librarianship on that long bus ride in 64. There wasn't any follow-up on that idea of library science at the time because everybody I talked to wasn't too positive about librarianship, which was sort of a misleading thing. Actually, my mother was more interested in having me get an engineering degree and taking over my father's business, but I kept following the interest in history. Pursued graduate degrees in history, first a year at UCLA and then transferred to University of Wisconsin. And as I was finishing the thesis, and the thesis was about back to rural developments in another part of French-speaking West Africa in Côte d'Ivoire or Ivory Coast, the African studies bibliographer left the position at Wisconsin, went off to England to teach for a few years.
That was?
David Hennig, who was a classmate of mine, and he just finished his PhD a little bit earlier. In fact, he was overseas the same time I was, a fairly close friend. And so I got that job, and that was my first job in a library, starting March 1, 1974. And not to my surprise, but I was soon discovered that this job was just as enjoyable as I thought it might be working in a library. And I've never regretted switching into librarianship.
And those were heady days at Wisconsin, and you had some pretty big names in your class and as advisors.
Yes, yeah. I mean, you know, Vansina and Phil Curtin and Jan Vansina were my advisors. David Hennig was in the class with me. Joe Miller was in the class with me. Paul Lovejoy. Those are the biggest names. I think there's many others. We don't have to go all that. Oddly enough, Phil Curtin was one of the few people positive about librarianship when I talked to him. I just happened to visit with him the week I was leaving Senegal in 66, and he was positive on the issue. He thought of it as a six-year program to be work as a full-fledged librarian. He even outlined 2 years of study of library science, 2 years of master's in African studies, and 2 years of an internship someplace working under an experienced bibliographer, maybe somebody at Northwestern or something like that. I'm not sure he remembered that later, but it was an interesting perspective. He was positive about it. So in that year and a half I was the acting African studies bibliographer at University of Wisconsin, I attended some of the national meetings of the African Studies Association and its librarian affiliate, and I got to know some of the librarians here at Michigan State. And so when a job came open here I already knew the people at Michigan State, and I already knew it was a strong library and it had lots of money. Seemed to have even more money. In fact, did have more money than Wisconsin for African studies. That's how I ended up at. Actually, the other piece of that why I ended up at Michigan State was that when I became African Studies Director, African Studies Bibliographer at Wisconsin, the director of the African Studies Center, who was the one the library directors went to, who do you have that can fill in? It was David Wiley.
Who's been interviewed in this very series.
Who was then the director of African Studies Program at Wisconsin. He didn't publish enough to get tenure, so he was slid down in an assistant role in the African Studies program there, and that made him a good candidate to be hired away by Michigan State. And so in January of 1977, David Wiley came here, and later that year they were looking for another African Studies librarian person, and he knew me from those days at Wisconsin.
Oh.
So that's how I landed here.
And when you landed here, who was in the African Studies librarianship area?
Okay.
International Studies, I should add.
Well, it was called International Library, the unit, which was essentially a suite of offices. But I think you want to back up the history of African Studies collecting here. And it really took off in the early 60s. And it was a part of a larger movement. If you think about it, Michigan State was Michigan State College of Agriculture and Applied Science until 1955. And then it became Michigan State University and expanded dramatically in the post-World War II years under John Hanna. And then late in the 1950s or someplace in there, John Hanna met with this politician from Eastern... Zeke. From Eastern Nigeria, who wanted somebody to build him a university. And John Hanna, who was already had his connections with Washington and U.S. money in Washington, we'll do that for you, and got some U.S. money and sent dozens of MSU faculty to Africa and really created the African Studies. Well, that was a takeoff of the African Studies program here. And lots of people with no previous experience in Africa were exposed to Africa. Now, once you have these dozens of faculty going to Africa, they want to read up on what there is about Africa. And at some point in the early 60s, maybe you know the date better than I do, Peter, Carl Eicher of the Agricultural Economics, somebody in regular economics, I think somebody in political science, met with the director of libraries, Dick Chapin, and said, we want more things on Africa in our library. We want to build up the holdings there so that we can be better informed when we go over there to teach. The director's solution was to look on somebody in the staff and put them in charge of a new unit called International Library, which was not a self-standing library, but it was a reference collection with librarians and staff, office space, and things like that. For the head of that, he picked Eugene Dabinko, who had been on the staff since sometime in the 50s. Gene Dabinko was a refugee from Hungary, originally from Transylvania, which meant he was multilingual in his original education, and Russian, German, Hungarian, Romanian, and then picks up the French and English later on. He had already had overseas experience for MSU. When as soon as he got here, he was sent off to Okinawa to build a library there, or work on building a library there. Another year in South India, working on a MSU project in South India, presumably with USAID money or the predecessor of USAID. And so he had the international experience. He was head of acquisitions at the time, but they created the new unit called International Library, and he proceeded to gather staff around him. There was another librarian with him, Susan Kanoki. I'm not sure she was the first one, but she was early in the late 60s. She worked under Gene Dabinko. She later went to the Library of Congress. And they were very active. They had good secretarial help and all these things. Gene made several overseas trips, and he had these long trip reports in the style of the Library of Congress librarians that went overseas.
Which we can still read in our archive.
in the stacks, too. He was shrewd in promoting the visibility of the MSU libraries in this area by having acquisitions lists. And there was, so he started this thing called, this I think it was a bi-monthly, something called Africana Select Recent Acquisitions. Started in 1965. And kind of that one went on until the late 90s. He also had one separate one for Asia and for Latin America. Now, Gene was overall all these international, was Asia, Africa, and Latin America, but not Eastern Europe was under Gene DeBenko. So he was the overall, and he developed a special interest in Africa because he quickly recognized that the strongest focus on this campus, because of the experience with the University of Nigeria, the strongest interest, international interest here was in Africa at the time and not elsewhere.
And we had some big purchases around this time.
Yes, we did. There was lots of money. There was, you know, the one that still sticks out in my mind is the Congo collection. A retired Belgium officer,
Derek,
sold his library, and I'm not sure Gene was involved, or it might have been the director involved, but the big dollars went to that thing. The other thing that stuck out even more, in a sense, is the microfilm from the Public Record Office, which is now, I believe, the British Library, but records of the British overseas experience in Africa. And we've bought thousands of reels of microfilm, and almost all of it was purchased in those early days before I came here in 1977. In terms of staff, after Susan Kanoke, I'm not sure exactly when, but she went to the Library of Congress at one point, and then Anna Mazera came on the staff first as a reference librarian in the late 60s. Her husband was connected with the secessionist regime in Biafra. She stopped in to visit friends here in Michigan State on the way home. She had worked with Michigan State people in eastern Nigeria, and then the war went bad, so she stayed here, and the rest of her career was here. And she became gradually moved into the International Library, became the Africana bibliographer fairly quickly after she came here, partly because it was DeBenko had a sabbatical overseas in Uganda to work on some research project there. She was sort of the primary person responsible for Africa in those days, with Gene doing oversight and Gene doing sometimes more of the traveling than she was, too. Moving forward. The next, in a sense, big development is back to Carl Eicher again, who we mentioned with the early meeting with Chapin to get an international thing off the ground. Carl Eicher, his PhD was not about Africa. His PhD was about American Indians project. But he was in part of the University of Nigeria, taught there several years, and got really interested in African development, and that became his career. He had lots of projects going on in the French-speaking countries of West Africa. He was, after the Civil War, the MSU was kind of pushed out of Nigeria, working in Nigeria. And then we had this drought. His project led to the creation of something called the Sahel Documentation Center. Now, the Sahel is a region in one of the dryland regions of West Africa where there was a severe drought in 1968 to 1972, fair amount of famine and distress at the time. The aid agencies got busy allocating funds towards this, especially, you know, USAID was supposed to get projects going, coordinate projects. And Carl Eicher was already talking with USAID quite a bit anyway, and he saw an opportunity to coordinate some of his existing projects there. And something else he wanted to do was his students on these various projects were collecting libraries over in Cook Hall, which was the annex of the for the Aggie Khan department. And he wanted to get all this stuff into the library and let the librarians take care of it. So he created a grant that called for a full-time librarian, not paid by the library at all, plus a half-time one or two grad assistants helping out, plus money for books. That wasn't all the grant money. Some of the money for the librarian came from the African Studies Center. He talked John Hunter, who was briefly the director of the African Studies Center, into supporting this grant proposal.
Another one in this series.
another important name in the history of, yeah. And so the Sahel Documentation Center was created in about 1976, which the center means it's just a back room in the suite of the International Library. The first librarian for that was Gretchen Walsh, who was hired away from UC Riverside, where she was producing a computerized bibliography there on drought regions all over Africa, and that caught Carl Eicher's eye. But Gretchen went on to a more hard money job within a year of getting here. That created the opening. They asked around. Wiley knew about me at having worked at Wisconsin. I was at Buffalo at the time, but they hired me away. Got me away from Buffalo to come to the soft money job. And what we did, one of the big projects going there was to produce a Sahel bibliographic bulletin, a quarterly bilingual bulletin about all the new publications about Africa, all the articles about the Sahel region, not the whole of Africa, but the Sahel region. And it was good for visibility for MSU.
And these days we take it for granted because the internet is awash with data, with information. But
that's
going
right.
Back to the 70s, even the 80s, digging this stuff out was hard work.
Digging this stuff out was what I was used to doing. And the reason the library work was so much fun is you could dig as part of your work, and you were paid to watch what was coming out new. And that was a fun thing about it. And you could keep reading about Africa. The first time around, of course, I stayed here from 77 to 1982. I did get a job at UCLA, which was hard money and a better job in some ways, and worked there until 1989, and then for family reasons ended up coming back.
I've still got letters that I wrote when I was into African Studies librarianship to you when you were at UCLA, I can testify to that. And then you come back for a second time.
A second time. Let's say the person that replaced me was a higher recent PhD in history from Michigan State University. He eventually got himself a good teaching job.
It was Dorsey.
And Lurthen Dorsey at Clemson University. And so there was a vacancy. I applied. They hired me back. I didn't come back. There was a vacancy for over a year. I dragged my feet about coming back, but eventually I did, and it's worked out fine. Let's see. I think the next thing we want to go into a little bit of what are the projects we're involved with as librarians here,
and also the national dimension here.
That's sort of what I had in mind. When you're a Title VI National Center of Excellence or whatever the key word is, I'm never quite sure, you have more money than the average library for Africa, and I think it's so incumbent upon you to take the leadership in developing the collection and doing it cooperatively with other people, and in a sense, you pick up ideas from other people. So the MSU librarians have always been involved in the African Studies Association, which is why I knew about Dabenko and Anna Mazera while I was still at Wisconsin. As I think over the years, and then we've been chairs of a number of committees there's the African Studies Association Archives Library Committee, which later became the Africana Librarians Council. And, who's been chair of this? That I've been chair once. Anna Mazera was chair. Peter Lim was the chair later on. We've been chairs of some of the subunits of that group. I've been the chair of CAMP, which is an affiliated cooperative buying project within the Center for Research Libraries that tries to get originally was focused on microfilm, now it's gone beyond, but it tries to make rare materials available that individual libraries can't do. And the other project is there was a newsletter with the Africana Librarians Association that I took a turn at editing that newsletter. It's not by the ALC, but it's kind of for the ALC, and various librarians over the years have stepped up to put this out, and it became the record for what the ALC, the Africana Librarians Council, did, and news about African Studies librarianship.
It's institutional record, and it's a small group, but in some ways it's a potent group that gets things done. Another thing that you got done, I've got it here in front of me, was your book of dissertations on Africa from 1974 to 87, which was published by none other than the African Studies Association in 1989 with Al Kagan and Gregory Larkin. But again, reflecting on where we've come from, back in 1989 even, the compilation of bibliographies about Africa was still highly significant. The sorts of things we can do now with a few clicks and flicks of a mouse, again, had to be dug out, but not only dug out, classified. And so that reminds me that one of the things that you're most famous for, Joe, particularly around the African Studies librarians, is your great experience and erudition on classification, on subject headings, on African languages. In other words, the turning of the sometimes rough data into more refined and usable, user-friendly sorts of forms. And some people might think, well, what's so difficult here? Well, you can explain that it is rather more complex than you might think.
Back in the 60s, when I was digging out information about the Casamance region of West Africa, and you go through I was mostly into the Njola people, but there's another ethnic group, Jula, that has a very similar name, and the librarians and compiling bibliographies in England, they would routinely get that confused, and that in a sense didn't bother me too much. You'd spot it one way or the other, but it helps if somebody who's doing the indexing knows the distinction between Jula and Jola, and that one letter difference between a U and an O makes two completely different people. But this you call branching out or expanding your reach, which is one of the things that the library directors want you to take new responsibilities. But what's sort of unique, I guess I'm sort of unique in this respect, is and it wasn't in my first years of first decade or so of librarianship, but gradually I thought that you get into cataloging, you can put your expertise to work there, probably even greater than collection development. Because in collection development, the bulk of your work is buying the same books at Wisconsin, Michigan State, Indiana, all the Title VI centers. But if you catalog, you can get into some niches that are hard for other people to do. So when you do something on West Africa, I'll know more about it than other people, and it's easier for me to deal with that. Another way of saying this is, we've always tried to help. Well, I don't know, we always, but it's been part of our jobs to help catalogers identify what a subject is about. And while I was at UCLA, I sat in the classes for Swahili to try to learn one of the major African languages. We had a fair number of publications in Swahili. All of us do a certain amount. I never learned enough to really catalog Swahili easily, but it was a useful experience to get to understand how different an African language is from all the European languages. When I came back to Michigan State, we had a strong program in Ethiopian studies. Harold Barkas was here. He, not in his early years, but some of his later years, he had a lot of students from Ethiopia doing PhDs here in African history, so that we had a strong interest in Ethiopia, or this faculty did, and so I started paying more attention to how you catalog books in Amharic, and I realized after a while, I should really learn that language a little bit. I had I had studied Arabic, or took Arabic for 3 years in graduate school. And like taking Arabic is a little bit like taking piano lessons. You don't really learn to play the piano properly taking piano lessons. And taking Arabic, I really didn't learn how to read Arabic, but I knew the alphabet. And Amharic being a Semitic language, you could have understood some of the core things. It wasn't totally strange. The idea of dealing with a different alphabet wasn't totally strange. I never learned to read Arabic, Amharic much at all, but I could decipher the characters. I knew how to transcribe the characters into the Latin alphabet, which was needed for cataloging. And I became one of the very few, if not the only one in the country. There are some people in overseas that can do this, but they can catalog books in Amharic. I do this with the help of graduate students from Ethiopia that check my transcriptions and summarize the books for me. But it's sort of like doing something unique that nobody else can do, and I've been trying to promote this for other things. And I think, you, Peter, have grabbed onto cataloging things in lots of different African languages, some of which you studied and some of which you rely on Google Translator. But it's something that if you're really specialist, you go the extra mile, take the time to catalog things that are difficult and not just put words like Amharic language texts or something like that, which is the other thing.
And there's a benefit back to the scholars in locating material, understanding what's in the catalog, what's relevant to their research. But in terms of unique materials, you also made quite an impact, I think, in coming back to this question of experience and knowledge of Africa, you know, travel in Africa, liaising with African scholars there and librarians there, you were able to build up a little network of contacts. And some of those people later on became our library vendors. I'm thinking here of Ethiopia that you just mentioned, but in different parts of Ethiopia, but also in Liberia and places like that.
That's true.
You've got this wonderful collection of Liberian newspapers, which in many ways is unique, because we've got something like 250 separate titles.
Which is a little bit of overkill. But, yeah, I took, in theory, once you travel quite a bit to Africa, ideally you'd go there every few years. I haven't done that much, but I've taken advantage of somebody I knew in Liberia. I didn't take advantage of him exactly, but advantage was for MSU. But the man needed work. His institution was falling apart because of the Civil War. I just put him to work selling newspapers to Michigan State. And we got a lot of very unique material. So far, not a lot of use made of it, but it is preserved. It was a war-torn area for a long time. And it was something that nobody else was doing anywhere to the same depth. So I felt good that I would steal money from other places to put it on something unique like this. The Ethiopia one took a little bit more work, a couple trips. One is for some other reasons, one out of personal money. But we got a vendor in Ethiopia to supply us books to went beyond what Library of Congress has since made available books from Ethiopia to lots of libraries. But I've continued to cultivate a unique vendor so that there's a little bit of diversity in the things that are coming into the country, and this vendor will supply things that Library of Congress is not likely to get, or partly because where he's situated. But part of it's just happenstance.
And in a way, it's a way that we as African studies librarians, African studies scholars can give back to our African counterparts. And I know you've sent generous donations of books as well. You know, at one stage you sent 13 boxes to Ethiopia of linguistic material, and we've sent material to a whole range of African countries. And this is not just junk. This is selected material, often in conjunction liaison with the librarians there. And we have also done some partnerships in recent years with libraries in Malawi and Zimbabwe. Now, what struck me when I came here first in 2000 was you'd done this very original sort of little mini project in Zimbabwe with the library director there, the University of Zimbabwe, in making available a sort of an exchange, but an exchange that was worth their while of dissertations from each country. And you made it, very generously, you made it comfortable for them. But I thought that was an excellent way of librarians, of libraries in the two continents, North America and Africa, actually doing something meaningful together. And that might sort of lead on to perhaps a sort of final area might be the involvement with the African Studies Centre.
Yeah.
And this series began when I proposed to David Wiley that we consider an oral history of African studies, and David sort of took it on board with me, sort of like a joint partnership with the African Studies Centre and the library. But you've over the years you've worked with different African Studies Centre, but predominantly here at MSU. And maybe you could talk a little bit to the ways in which you, as a librarian of African Studies, sort of liaise with or bounce off the centre.
Yeah,
I mean, this can be multifaceted.
Okay. I want to come back to cataloging later. But
But
with this center, you know, this started before I got here. I mean, I think Eugene Debenko was an active player with the in the 60s with people, especially certainly in the early 70s anyway. And he, you know, that interim director, he was a close friend of John Hunter's. He was a good friend of Carl Eicher's. Well, Carl Eicher didn't have friends so much. Carl Eicher was all work, but he knew the players. He was posted as the assistant director of the African Studies Center there for a while in the 77 or thereabouts, and he gave kind of a core course IDC interdisciplinary something curriculum. Anyway, a core course in African studies. Kind of an interdisciplinary thing. I think I'm not sure what he had him doing. It's a course that I did with him 1 year, and then I kind of picked it up and did it 2 years later before I ran off to UCLA. But it was an interdisciplinary course about how to do research in Africa, how to work the library, and what are the different perspectives on Africa, and how do researchers in different disciplines do work. In terms of further interacting with the center, I think we've got a pretty
title
good...
Title VI is a big one, of course, every 3 years.
What's true? We...
Crunching data. You do that well.
Well, yeah, they want numbers for what the library has to be. And actually, they're in love with the fact that right now we've got two PhDs in African history on the library staff. I'm never convinced you need PhDs, but anyway,
comes in handy
but
at
it
times.
But they like it, and it does inform our work. You know, there's a faculty seminar. There used to have these evening faculty seminars for people that want to learn more outside their fields. And I think I amazed David Wiley when I took it on in 91, and we had about, I don't know, 8-10 weeks of I had different people from the different disciplines come off and say how they studied Africa and what are the key resources and what are the key ideas in your discipline. And it was a very fascinating seminar for me. We didn't get too many African studies people to come routinely except for when they had a present. We got a lot of librarians who sat in on it and enjoyed learning about Africa in a variety of ways. And
something you could bring back one of these days.
Yes, next party. Things have moved on. There wasn't that much attendance, unfortunately. It was the same problem I had when I taught that interdisciplinary course. You didn't get much attendance, and some people aren't bothered when you get only 6 to 10 people, but I think if you don't get 10 to 20, is it worth it? Different people from the library have served in the advisory committee in the African Studies Center. I'm pretty sure Anima was on that. I was never on, but I think Gene must have been on. Anima was on. You've been on. And we've worked with the center faculty in attracting donations. Sometimes it's just when I want to clean out their offices and get rid of all the project papers for the Great Lakes Project for the fisheries of the Great Lakes. And
that can bring us back to cataloging, actually, because you've been actually cataloging some of the corpus, the archive of some of these giants of African studies. Mm-hmm. Earlier on you mentioned Harold Marcus, but it's David Robinson, still around East Lansing, and the late Carl Eicher, but all of those people have their papers now reside in at MSU. Yep. And you, of course, were able to bring all your experience and knowledge about Africa, but also about those scholars enhancing those catalogue records, the inventories, the finding lists, which are now online. Yep. And, of course, they keep coming. And, I mean, were there other memorable faculty whose papers that you've dealt with?
You know,
Jim Bingham came this week.
But Jim Bingham has dropped off things over the last several years, including field notes, research notes for his dissertation, things like that. You know, you don't get that very often, but Jim did it. David Robinson did it. With Harold Marcus, it wasn't so much field notes as other memorabilia and what's drips and drabs. And his office files. We got his office files and made a
manuscripts
and inventory. But, yeah, we got manuscripts, books almost ready to publish that are sitting in our collection now that somebody might, people should find it useful.
Onoma Zera's papers also. And I remember when I arrived here, another thing that impressed me was the way in which you look kindly upon employing African grad students. And we had Mary Mwandi, who was, I think, working around about the time I arrived. And I think she worked with you to catalogue Onoma's papers. She did the inventory, and I think all three of us probably worked on that, which is a very unique collection on Biafra and the University of Nigeria and Nsukka.
This was cleaning out somebody's office. But, yeah, that was a useful collection. And actually, Anima told me, we're going to give favors to African students. They have trouble getting money. So I learned some lessons from her. She knew how to take care of certain things. She knew how to dress well. She knew how to fix up numbers for this and that.
But many of these students have also brought their linguistic proclivities to bear.
Yep.
We've made good use of that. And in a sense, you know, you've helped to build a solid unit here. Maybe 9-10 libraries like this around the country with Title VI funding collecting at a very high level. And you've been able to inject a lot of expertise, unique materials.
If we could swing back to cataloging, one of the reasons that I discovered cataloging so much fun is one of the things we do when we're collecting books is we look at book reviews to be sure we got all these books. Frequently you look at a book review and there's about a book that the title says something in West Africa. And you look at the review, and it's not about West Africa at all. It's about only the country of Togo. Then you go look at the catalog record. Is Togo on that catalog record? Maybe isn't it? Maybe no. But if you're a cataloger, you can put Togo, you can get Togo added to the cataloger without any trouble. Another one of my favorite tales is I was reading an antiquarian dealer, a dealer catalog for out-of-print books, older books, something I used to spend my first 10 to 20 years in librarianship. It was both Wisconsin and here. Spent a lot of time going through to see if we have all these books and see if we get them if we don't have them. Sort of after a while, diminishing returns, so I don't stop doing that. But there was one that said, here's a special edition of this book, 1944 German. It's the uncensored version of this work. Checked our catalog. Well, we had that book. We had two copies of that book. Pulled them down. They were not unique. One of them was the uncensored version. The other one was apparently a censored version. The same exact same number of total pages, but one of them had certain pages replaced by illustrations or things like that. So I got to do, on the basis of doing my job as a selector and checking out-of-print catalogs, I discovered this fact and created a new record for the one that was slightly different.
The devil is in the detail.
The devil in the details.
Yeah.
The other thing, which I think you were going to mention, is subject headings or, you know, librarians, the metadata. What do you call it? The Jula and Jola. And there's all sorts of work laying behind these, and we've tried to modernize, these are Library of Congress created out of subject headings, but we get to submit proposal to them to change things or add things. And that brings your expertise to bear, your familiarity with the literature. And it's, you know, it gets very difficult when you move away from a country that's far from, you know, if it's about Senegal or Ivory Coast, I know very well the ethnic groups there. You get into Cameroon and things like that. It gets even difficult for me, but it's got to be even more difficult for somebody who's not an African studies specialist. And you can make a little sense, and there's frequently confusions of similar words used for very different people, and they look alike to the non-specialists and the specialists. And, this is not the same at all. Nguni and Ngoni are not the same things. And Julin, Jola are not the same things. They might look alike, but whatever.
And then there's all the ethnocentric headings that we've changed as well over the years. Imprecise headings, particularly on Southern Africa, there's been quite a lot. The misapplication of some linguistic terms.
Some of this is ongoing. Some of it's been very difficult, and some of this dealing with the Library of Congress. And
some are still battles to be won.
Some are still battles to be won. I don't know if they're getting close to giving up the battle, but I haven't read quite yet. Some of the Library of Congress, they're librarians and not scholars. They got a few scholars there, but the key people are librarians, and they don't understand that reference books stand below refereed university press monographs. They give too much weight to reference books. But that's what makes life interesting, and it's frustrated at times, but this librarianship it's been a great career, collecting books, spending other people's money to buy books, seeing everything that's published. You never see everything, of course, but seeing how much more is published compared to, you know, when you started 50 years ago, when you started down this road, went to Africa first 51 years ago. There's a lot more now than then.
And you've been here in the 70s, the 80s, it's the 90s, the 2000s, and the 2010s. So MSU's been very lucky to have you here twice as Librarian of African Studies. Thanks very much, Joe Lauer.
Thank you.